Welcome to TMO's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Thursday, October 17th in the year of our Lord, 2017. I'm your guest host today, Brian Chaffin, and with me is the slightly cranky at me, Jeff Butts.
Slightly cranky?
Yeah.
You
were yelling at me just a second ago. And also joining us is John Martellaro.
The always pleasant, helpful John.
Ah, yes. The gentleman of gentlemen. The gentleman of gentlemen. Right. Whatever. Anyway, Jeff's out. Jeff's out for today and tomorrow. So today we have the three of us, and let's just dive right into it. Jeff Butts, you did some benchmarking for us. You actually dug into, you wanted to put some numbers to this whole notion of whether High Sierra is actually faster on older Macs. What'd you find?
Yep. I found that it is, at least a little bit. It's better. It's quite a bit better at speech recognition, actually. It jumped from, if I remember right, under Sierra, my Mac Mini was able to do 10 words per minute, 14.5 words per second under Sierra.
That's much faster, by the way.
High Sierra was 18.4 words per second.
Wow.
So it jumped from 14 to 18.
I don't think I can say 18 words in a second.
Yeah, that's a lot of words in a second.
That is a lot of words in a second.
How did you test that?
It's built into Geekbench 4, actually.
Gotcha.
Geekbench 4, it runs a lot of tests. They were better across the board, at least modestly better. I picked out a few good ones, the multi-core and single-core scores, of course, SQLite processing, HTML5 parsing, HDR processing, speech recognition, face detection, and memory bandwidth.
Did anything come out slower?
No. Everything was faster under High Sierra.
Right, well, you know, so this matches, I know we've talked a little bit about this before, but this matches my own experiences with my 2011 MacBook Air with, you know, a measly 4 gigs of RAM. It was, High Sierra breathed a breath of fresh life into that. It went from making me want to hurl it against the wall to being quite to finding its performance quite acceptable for my workflow.
Yep. Yeah, you know, Gandalf, my Mac Mini, I don't use it very much now that I've got the Hackintosh built, but it's nice to know that I can turn back to it. It's nice to know that I can do things.
Have you actually spent any time on the Mac Mini? And what model do you have?
The Mac Mini is a mid-2010 model. It has 8 gigs of RAM and a 256 gigabyte SSD for storage.
Oh, not bad for 2010.
Yeah, that's actually probably quite usable.
The SSD is aftermarket. That's an OWC edition.
That's probably quite usable, though, isn't it?
Still pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the benchmarks would be much lower, I think, if I didn't have the SSD.
Right. And then the 16 gigs of RAM, too.
8 gigs.
Oh, 8 gigs. I'm sorry. I thought you said 16.
I wish I had 16 gigs, but I broke one of my memory sockets when I was putting the SSD in.
Oh, brutal. Brutal.
Yeah.
So, John, do you have an old Mac that you put High Sierra on?
No, I'm running High Sierra on a 2015 MacBook. That's as far back as I go. But I wanted to ask Jeff if it's attributable to the APFS optimization for the SSD you have in there, or is it other computational factors?
I think it's other computational factors, simply because we're hearing about this from people with multiple models of older Macs.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Apple has long been, I think, ridiculously accused of using new operating systems to cripple older devices to make you upgrade. It's just There's so much philosophically and intellectually wrong with that that it just drives
me nuts. It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous because I have seen this consistently. Every time a new operating system comes out, Gandalf performs a little bit better every time.
Right. So the but this is the first time though that I've seen a marked improvement. I mean, like, so all right, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Usually when Apple is releasing a new operating system, they're certainly keeping, you know, Apple does an excellent job of supporting older devices, an absolutely excellent job of supporting older devices, but they're tailoring what they're doing to, you know, an ever shifting and ever evolving bits of new technology that make up newer Macs.
Right.
And well, and I absolutely accept that. What is interesting to me though is that this is the first time when we've seen marked performance improvements on old Max.
Brian, yeah. You're dancing around something. I think you're on to something. It could be that when they test a new version of the OS, say High Sierra against, say, a 2009 iMac, they find out that there's a problem and they say, well, you know, we could drop this Mac from the supported list, or we could go in there and dig into the OS and figure out why it's not performing satisfactory and fix the code, and then those fixes percolate forward.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't say this in my article, but I'm going to say it now. I would challenge anybody to find a 7-year-old PC that can run Windows 10 as well as a 7-year-old Mac Mini can run High Sierra.
Right. Right. And your Mac Mini is almost 8 years. You're coming up on 8 years.
I'm coming up on 8 years. Yeah. It's a mid 2010.
And I'm definitely at 7 years with my 2011 MacBook Air. And as we've pointed out before, Jeff Gamet and Dave Hamilton and I all have the same generation of MacBook Air. I think Dave's got a smaller, slower one. But we all have 2011 MacBook Airs, and we've all reported the exact same results.
And Andrew Orr saw several people on Reddit and in other forums saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And I linked to his article in my article.
My mother, Nancy Gravely, who has written for us for years, hasn't written
recently. I didn't know that was your mother.
Yes, that's my mother. Cool. She is putting it on, I think this week, she's putting it on her 2012 MacBook Pro. She was complaining about her MacBook Pro being pretty slow, and I wish she'd been able to do that before we did the show, but I hadn't heard back from her yet.
Yeah. Well, maybe she should run Geekbench before she does the upgrade and compare notes.
That would be fantastic. I'll see if she could do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can download Geekbench 4 and run it in tryout mode without spending any money.
Right. Right. So anyway, long story short, I think every single bit of anecdotal and now empirical evidence, thanks to your benchmarks, we have.
Yep.
Shows that High Sierra is bringing a lot better performance on older machines. I'm wondering if, maybe I'm seeing a performance increase on my 2015 5K iMac, but because it's less of a delta, I'm not noticing it.
Yeah.
I didn't run any benchmarks on that one.
Yeah, it seems people don't think about running benchmarks.
No, should have.
But I'm a geek.
You are a geek. You're a geek extraordinaire, and I love you for it. Did you run benchmarks on your Hackintosh too?
Yeah, I did. I believe I reported on those.
What were your findings?
But I can't remember. If it blows away the 27-inch 5K iMac.
No. Compared High Sierra to Sierra.
Oh no, I didn't compare Sierra to High Sierra because I went straight from Sierra to the High Sierra Beta and ran the Beta all the way through.
Right. All right. Well, that's pretty interesting. John, are you still with us?
I am.
Well, why don't you tell us about your piece you wrote on Friday, where you were taking Business Insider to task for taking Apple to task.
Something we do quite often. This was the blame game when customers obsess over an Apple iPhone. I saw an article at Business Insider that talked about this business of people misusing their phones, becoming obsessed with the phones, especially teenagers, iPhone neck, people who are sitting at the dinner table or in the movie theater glued to their phones. Antisocial behavior, and I really didn't like the rest of the title. It said, and reveals a growing problem for Apple, as if making a phone that is lovable and elegant and useful is a problem. You know, I don't think anybody at Apple sat down and said, we're going to design the display of this phone to hypnotize people or mesmerize them. We're going to design the operating system in such a way that as soon as people start using it, they become fixated on it, they obsess on it. There is a cultural problem. You carry around a device with a display that's connected to the internet and can go anywhere in the world and do anything and look at anybody's pictures and talk to anybody on the planet. You're going to have people who overuse it, obsess, and that's human nature. And Business Insider talked about Jonathan Ive and Tim Cook being approached by this problem and providing somewhat oblique answers. And, of course, they were criticized for being rather hedging, and they should be because they're not going to come out and say, well, we've created this obsessive device that's ruining the life of our children. It's not really Apple's problem at this point. It's up to parents. It's up to the communities, the teachers. Apple isn't going to counsel people on how to not obsess over their phones. It has to be a personal thing. It has to be part of your personality and your upbringing about how you use a phone.
Who did Business Insider talk to at Samsung about this problem?
No one's obsessed with their LG.
Their Samsung devices
or Google.
No one's obsessed with their Android devices. That's not true. But
that's a lie.
So the notion that this is somehow a problem for Apple is completely so far off base. It's laughable. But it may actually be a problem for society.
It is.
It may be a problem for civilization itself.
It's a huge problem with society.
But
we are disconnected.
We are. Either that or we're forging new ways to be connected.
Well,
and honestly, I believe that the jury is out there.
It's cultural change. And when I was watching Downton Abbey when it was airing first time around, they were in the 20s and they had their stodgy ways in their castle. And all of a sudden, their children and grandchildren were wearing funny clothes and dancing and drinking and playing music and doing all these newfangled things. And the parents were all whiny and obsessed about how society was falling apart and the morals of their children was deteriorating. This happens. Society changes. People move along. They use new tools and new ways. And a lot of people don't like the way they do it.
Well, to that point, do you remember all the talk about how people were addicted to AOL? Do you guys remember that stuff?
No, I don't remember that.
Absolutely. You know, like, you know, people become addicted to hearing that you've got mail notification.
Yep.
And apparently we survived the great AOL addiction of 1997 and you know, the late 90s, right? We survived that and we moved on, and I suspect we will survive iPhone addiction too. Now, that said, I wish we had like an hour to talk about this. Maybe Jeff and I can talk about it on ACM tomorrow.
I would love to, because I've got some interesting thoughts, I think.
Well, okay, so first of all, Apple itself is aware of this, and one of the things that Apple has said is that Apple Watch was created in part to free us from addiction to our phones.
Right.
And so Apple is actually aware of this. And now, again, I still completely reject the premise that addiction to smartphones is somehow a problem for Apple. That's, again, absurd.
But, come on, give me a balderdash.
But it is in fact balderdash. But but Apple itself is aware of the problem, and Apple wants to change it because they think it's the right thing to do. That's a very, very interesting aspect of this to me. Now, all of that said, just recently I was at dinner, and a family of three sat down. Lovely young woman, mother, father. They sat down. They pulled out their smartphones, and for the next 30 minutes, no one spoke to each other. They hardly looked at each other, if they even looked at each other. And they sat in silence, all, you know, buried in the... I find that fundamentally dysfunctional and sad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an issue, I think, for we as a people, but I don't think it's a problem for Apple. If anything, it actually just makes Apple more money.
Absolutely. It's a problem with the way our society has allowed itself to be swayed. You know, you won't see that happen in my house. We have an unwritten rule that, you know, yeah, I'll take my phone out of my back pocket just so I'm not sitting on it on the hard chair, but I don't open the case until the meal is finished.
Okay, we're running out of time, but I have one little anecdote. I have a friend who is a teacher, and she has had parents contact her and ask her for tips on how to keep their kids from being on their smartphones at the dinner table, and if she could please talk to them about that.
Wow. Yeah.
It's your job. Tell your kids to not have their smartphones at the table.
Exactly. This is the problem. Parents think teachers are going to impart moral values when that's not their job. And I know we're running out of time, but man, let's talk about this on ACM.
Yeah, let's do it. John, you have anything else to say?
No, that's it.
Well, good stuff, man. Thanks for writing that. This is an important conversation for, you know, we as members of society to be having. And it's important, absolutely, I think, to let our loved ones and our friends know that it's not okay to have their faces buried in their devices when they're talking to us, right? I mean, we owe that to each other.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, there's an app for that. It's called You're Being Rude.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm serious. It actually, if you're talking to someone and they've got their phone out, it starts a countdown and it makes a loud ticking sound while the clock ticks. And then you tap a button when they're done talking, the clock ticks back down. And after it's done, then it's your turn to talk.
Have you written that up for us?
Not for us. No.
Oh, you wrote it for App Device?
You know, I got to get a word in edgewise here. We talked to our parents at the dinner table because there's nothing more interesting to do. The iPhone sometimes is a welcome relief.
No. You are not helping, sir. You are not helping.
No.
Bad,
no.
John. Bad.
I don't mean that.
I know you don't. I know
you're serious family sense, but
you're being facetious.
I am.
Effing Martellaro.
Amen. Thank you for saying that, because I don't think I'm allowed to say it yet.
All right. Well, listen, guys, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Very welcome.
Yeah.
Very welcome.
Absolutely. And we'll see someone again tomorrow. And I guess that's it. We're out of here.
Thanks for joining us.